Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's. Brought to you by Poker Stars and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got it.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Coming up on the show today, the man who won this year's World Poker Tour Championship event back in April, the man who came in second to Greg Raymer in 2004 in the World Series of Poker main event, man who's racked up nearly $8 million in tournament winnings, David Williams, will be on the show today. Also, a report from my weekend at the opening weekend of the World Series of Poker Circuit event at the Hammond Horseshoe just outside of Chicago. Plus, we know the names of the two new inductees for the Poker Hall of Fame. All that today on the final table. Hello, I am Paul Harrah's, seated at table two in the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, while my partner Dennis Phillips is back out in Las Vegas, where he's been taking in some cash action over the last couple of days. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. And you, Paul?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. Before we get to anything else, we were scheduled to have on the show today a gentleman by the name of Brandon Steven, who's a car dealer from Wichita, which is not his claim to fame in the poker world. His claim to fame there is that he was the bubble boy for this year's World Series of Poker main event, November 9. He was the guy who, after more than 5 hours of battle, finally went out in 10th place, did not make the November 9, and we thought it was unfair that a guy like that would go out in that position and nobody would know his name. He has not been knocked out on the ESPN coverage yet. That'll happen in the next couple of weeks, but we were scheduled to have Brandon on the show today. The reason he can't do the show today is because he is still playing in the Festa al Lago main event at the Bellagio. In fact, last night Dennis and I were both sweating this guy online a little bit when we saw that he was in the top 20. Dennis and I talked to each other and said, this might not work out for the guest, because if he makes it to day five, which is today, we're not going to be able to have him on the show. Well, it turns out when the action stopped and there were 13 players left, Brandon Steven was still in there. He is eighth, right around chip average, right kind of in the middle of the pack in terms of chips. Annette Oberstad is way the leader. Jeff Madsen's there, Noah Schwartz, Alan Kessler. Out of 335 players, Brandon has made it to the final 13. They are, as we do this show live on Tuesday afternoon, they have begun to play down to the final six, who will make the TV table for Mike and Vince to call later on in this season 9 of the World Poker Tour. So Brandon will not be able to be here. I know you're in Vegas. Did you happen to be at the Bellagio and run into him, Dennis?
I didn't run into him at the Bellagio. I ran into him over at Caesars. We sat down and talked for a while. He had just finished up the day before. They played down to 41 players. He said he thought he was in fourth or fifth, didn't see the official count yet. Earlier that day, he had actually been the chip leader for a while. Was having a very good service, a very good tournament, a very good run of cards. Said he misplayed a hand. He didn't get into the details, but he said he misplayed a hand, cost him some chips, but he was still pretty solid. So, yeah, 41 left. He was in fourth or fifth. They played on the 13th. He's still in the middle of the pack. I don't think he minds missing the show. Let's put it that way. Real nice guy. Oh, and by the way, he and his brother do quite a bit of charity work. They're having one out at Wichita, Kansas, on the 26th of November. It's a fundraiser they've done before for some of the local charities there benefiting kids. He's asked me to come out to it, and I'm probably going to run out there to it. I'll be there. I think Joe Cotta's going to be there. A couple of the other pros that are involved in the charities that he's asked. And it should be a good time. He owns some car dealerships, but I think he has like five different businesses altogether. Anyhow, he does a lot of work for the community, a lot of work for the charities, and I'm happy to go out there and visit with him.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's going to be better for us to have him back on the show in a couple of weeks or whenever we can reschedule it. Maybe we'll do it between now and that event so he can come on and promote that even more. But he'll certainly have a story to tell, not only about being the November 9 bubble boy, but now about this really deep run in the Festa al Lago. So we'll get to all of that. Have you been playing any poker? Last week when I saw you here in St. Louis, you said you hadn't played since you got back from Europe.
Yeah, I did get a chance to play some. I actually played that night down in St. Louis for a little while in a cash game. Did some more traveling, and then the last couple of nights I've played here in Vegas. I played over at Caesars, and then I played at the Venetian last night in some cash games. Lively cash games, had some fun trying to get a little practice in for some of these bigger tournaments that are coming up. I take off again tomorrow morning, going to be gone. I'm going to Toronto and then Green Bay and then over to Denver and then back to Vegas. So I'm going to be gone for a number of days, and I wanted to get some poker playing in beforehand.
You know, pretty soon you're going to pass George Clooney's mileage in the movie Up in the Air.
Hey, I have 8 flights in the next 6 days. Other than that, I'm not doing anything.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Any success in the cash games out there?
Actually, it is. I ended up for both the sessions. I didn't play any high stakes, you know, really nosebleed type stuff, but it was a good bunch of people. Did very well. It was just, it's easy as playing in a 2-5. Most people would just, you know, 500, 1,000 in front of them, and I did very well there. And I was doing very well at the Venetian until one particular hand came up. Actually, I don't mind running this one by you. Tell me if you think I misplayed it, if you think the other guy misplayed it, what kind of hand you put him on. Do you mind going through this one?
Well, I will tell you right now that since you obviously lost the hand, you must have misplayed it.
Yeah. All righty. Cool. No problem. All right. Here we go. I started out with about 2,000 in front of me. I built up to a little over 4,000. I think I had like 4,200 in front of me, somewhere around that
range.
Was
this 2-5 or 5-10?
This was 5-10.
Okay.
All right. Most of the people at the table had sat down with somewhere around that 1,500 to 2,000. A later addition, after we've been playing there for an hour or two, sat down, and he had about 5,000. There's another gentleman there, a very good player that I played with a couple of other times, Tony, who also had about that. So we were the three big stacks at the table, but there wasn't anybody real short or anything like that. Anyhow, I'm under the gun. I look down, and I have two aces, a diamond and a spade ace. Kind of like looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 5-10. I limped in. Totally different from what I'd been doing the whole night. I'd been, you know, playing normal hand, playing ABC poker, going ahead and betting out most of the time. Decided I'd try something a little different. Had two folds, went to the gentleman who'd been fairly aggressive, only been at the table for about a half an hour, 45 minutes. I had the other deep stack. And he raised it to 50. He was raising probably a third of the pots. Definitely the aggressor at the table. Solid player, though. Nothing wrong with that. Seemed to be playing pretty well. Went all the way around to the button who matched the 50, came the other, and then the small blind, big blind, both folded, came back to me. So in this case, I limped in. I got the raiser. I have two people on the table. What would you do then in this particular position, Paul?
I'm probably going to 3-bet.
Yeah, I made it 160.
Yep.
So, yeah, exactly. Pretty standard play, really, coming in. Normally, when you do that, at least when I see somebody do that, you don't put them on aces. You put them on some sort of a powerful hand, but one that they really don't want to see the flop. Pocket tens, pocket jacks, something like that, maybe. Whereas, you know, overcards come, and then they don't know for sure. Plus, I was in position in front of the initial raiser. So, I would think he'd put me in somewhere in that range, maybe. Who knows? Anyhow, I made it to 150. This gentleman who had made the initial raiser, he called. The other person folded. So now I'm heads up, which is fine.
Okay.
Flop comes 10 of hearts, 8 of hearts, 4 of clubs.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. I didn't hesitate. I wasn't going to slow play it or anything like that. I bet out. Now, again, size-wise, I don't know whether you agree with this or not. I bet 180.
Okay, a little less than half the pot.
Yeah, you know, about almost half, not quite, right at that. This gentleman went in the tank for a little bit, raised it to 580.
Okay.
All right. Comes back to me. My thoughts right now that if he had plopped a set of 10s or a set of 8s, probably not going to be raising it that much right here.
Uh-huh.
Maybe, but I doubt it. Set of 4s is a definite possibility. Third set, a lot of people like to do, especially with two hearts on board, just to soon see where they're at and all. More than likely, I'm guessing at this stage that he could have the pocket jacks, the pocket queens, one of the overpairs there, thinks he's good against my hand, and wants to put the pressure and find out exactly where he's at.
Yep.
I don't know whether you agree with that or not.
He, depending on what kind of player he is, he could have called your three bet with ace 10 suited. Now he's hit top pair, top kicker, and he's going to find out, are you really, or are you for real, or are you in there with ace king or ace queen? Although I will say, if you made it 180 and he made it 580, he's over betting the pot there. That's more than a 3x raise. That's more than the whole pot combined. That's a pretty big raise, and it's sending off warning bells in my head. Not warning bells that I got to be worried, but warning bells that something hinky's going on.
Yep. Okay. So, again, comes back to you. Do you smooth call? Do you raise? What do you do there? You're obviously not getting out of the hand.
Well, there are only really two hands that I'm really, really worried about here. One would be the bottom set, as you talked about, and the other one would be that he's got ace-king of hearts. You said there were two hearts on the flop.
Yep.
Now, he may think that he's got two overcards. If he puts me on jacks, or even if it puts me on queens, he thinks he's got two overcards and a flush draw, so he thinks he's got 15 outs, which means he would really be ahead in his own mind. So those are really the only two hands I'm really worried about. But you know what? If that's the case, I would say let's find out right now, and I'm probably going to pop him back.
Okay. I made it 1280.
Good.
Okay. So, again, that pretty standard play here, and your analysis is about right. He goes into the tank for a minute or two and shoves all in.
And he's got about 5K?
He has me covered. I start out with the hand with about 4,200, 4,300 in that range. No, 41 to 4,200 is where I was at, actually, in between there, 41 and change. And he shoves, so he has me covered.
Yeah.
At this time, I mean, with a preflop plus what I bet there, I've got 1,500 in the pot already.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I finally did it. I talked over the hand. There were, you know, six other people at the table. And I finally said, I think you have a massive draw. That's what I think you have. I don't think you have anything. There's no way I can lay this down. So I call. He turned over an ace nine of hearts.
Ace nine of hearts. He called your three bet preflop, and now he's three betting you on the flop all in with, okay, he's got the nut flush draw, but not much else. He doesn't even have aces. There's one ace left in the deck, and it's not going to help him if it comes. So,
even if he put me on a lower pair, kings, queens, whatever the heck, and he thought his ace would be good, that's still only 12 out.
Right.
It still means he's, you know, can't be favored.
Yep. Not for his whole stack. That's a bad play on his part.
I didn't agree with it much or anything like that. The other gentleman at the table that had the deep stack said, you guys ought to run this twice. We agreed to do that. So now, are you ready for this?
Uh-huh. Oh, no.
Okay. First time running. All righty. Out there on the board right now, the turn card is an 8, river is a 7. With his 9, it was 10, 8, no, 6, 7.
Runner straight.
Runner straight. No heart. Runner straight. So he wins the first one.
Oh, no.
All righty. On the second one, again, there's I did screw this up. I apologize. It was 10-8-6, not 10-8-4.
Okay.
Apologize for that. 10-8-6 out there. Six
okay, so he has a gut shot.
Yeah. He catches a 7 on the river there. All righty. Second time he runs, the first card he flips over is a 9. Second, the river card is another 7. So now there's a straight on the table.
Uh-huh.
So he wins the first one, and we chop the second one.
You get quartered.
I get quartered. So for out of an $8,000 pot, I get $2,000 of it back.
Oh, unbelievable.
7-7 of the two river cards.
Wow. That's ridiculous.
So anyhow. So it put me back to about where I started. I played for a little while longer, won a few hundred back, and then just got out of there. I was just kind of disillusioned after that one.
Yeah, I would think you would be.
But I was kind of curious at your opinion on it and how you would have played it.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think I would have called his shove. At that point, I'm not going to put him on the big draw. I'm going to think that, you know, he's acting like he's making one of those kind of moves, but he actually does. He has flopped a set. And I'm probably going to lay it down, and I'm going to throw that 1,200 or whatever it was on the flop away. And, you know, I'm going to end up losing less than you in the long run. but I'm probably not going to call the four-bet shove.
Yeah, well, and I wish I'd have been you then, because it would have saved me a couple of grand. I made the right read. I actually announced to the table he's on a massive draw. That's what I put you on, and I called him and turned my aces over, and he turned over the two hearts.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You know what? Now that we know that he had the gut shot draw as well, so now he, in his mind again, he thinks he's got hearts. He thinks his aces might be good, and he thinks the you know, if a seven comes, he's going to be good there. So again, he's talked himself into 15 outs, which is, you know, much better than the 12 outs that we put him on. Of course, we know he only had 12 because the aces were dead to him. But tough hand. Anyway.
It's poker. It's fun. I'll tell you what. It's enjoyable doing it. It's enjoyable talking about him afterwards. Like I said, he's not a bad player. In no way, shape, or form I think he did definitely overplay the hand. But he thought there was a pretty decent chance he could push me out of the pot, too, by shoving there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, if I've got 1,500 out of my 4,000 in there, odds are pretty good I'm going to call.
All right.
And I could have easily had a set there.
Yep, you could. Yeah, there's no reason why you can't have top set. All right, let's talk about the World Series of Poker Circuit event outside of Chicago at the Horseshoe in Hammond, Indiana. I was there this weekend. I had planned on getting there Thursday night, but I had to work on Friday, so I didn't go till Friday night. But a couple of my friends were there for event number one on Friday. They did drive up Thursday night, and they thought, well, you know, it starts at noon. We'll get there at about 11:15 or 11:30. That'll give us plenty of time to register for this. Boy, were they wrong. Remember last year when this event at this casino, the Horseshoe in Hammond, drew 1,400 people. This year, the number was up over 1,600, Dennis.
Wow.
My friends who got there got in line at 11:30. This is a $340 buy-in. They got in there at 11:30, and they were alternates number 190 and 191. Now, they were told by the registration staff, everybody who is registered as an alternate will eventually get in there. They didn't get in there. Now, the tournament started at noon. They didn't get in until 3:55 p.m. in level 8, almost 4 hours into this thing. They got a full stack, but, of course, at that point, you're playing, I don't know, maybe it's 150, 300, or 200, 400 with a 25 ante, and both of them were done by dinner that night. Unfortunately, ran into some bad cards. I got there Friday night and signed up for Saturday's event number two, which was a $560 buy-in. Had 1,000 people less on Saturday than they did on Friday. We ended up with about 600 in that event. It was a good field, but I can't remember ever being this card dead in a tournament. I literally won one hand in 4 hours. And that was a hand where I had to 4-bet pre-flop all in with a pair of kings, and the other two players laid it down. That's the only hand I won in 8 levels, 4 hours of play, before just getting in trouble. You know, I would lose my first hand with tens against ace-queen, a queen's there on the flop. I finally ended up shoving short with the ace-nine of spades. I got called by the king of diamonds and the queen of clubs. I flopped two nines. I flopped trips, and he went runner clubs, and I was out. It was not a good day. The good news for me, and this has been the good news for me in tournaments over the last couple of months, is that allowed me to go play in the cash games, and the cash games at the Horseshoe Hammond are always really, really good. They've got more than 30 tables there, and the room is always packed. Long list to get on everything, but I got knocked out, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so I was able to get into a game within an hour or 90 minutes. And you remember when I was in Las Vegas the week before, I was complaining about the lack of pot limit Omaha out there?
Uh-huh.
No such lack at the Horseshoe Hammond. There were 1-2, 2-5, 5-10, and even some high roller 10 and a quarter PLO games with massive stacks on the table. I didn't play those. I played mostly 5-10 and a little bit of 2-5. And a matter of fact, there's a hand that I want to talk to you about. I don't want to get into this too long because we do have David Williams coming up in a few minutes here. But this is one of the PLO hands that I played. And you tell me what you think about it. I was under the gun with 9-8-7-7. I'm sorry. No.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm in middle position. I'm not in under the gun. I'm in middle position, and I'm the third limper into the pot. I've got 9-8-7-7, a pretty decent run down there.
Oh, yeah.
Then the guy to my left, who's a pretty good player, he makes it $30. This is in a 2-5 game. He makes it $30. The button and the other limpers and I all call, so we go five ways to this, and the pot's $150. The flop comes 7-5-3, which means I flop top set with sevens.
Right. Okay.
It's check to me. I check because I know the guy to my left is going to bet.
Gotcha.
He's represented aces. He really had only raised when he had aces single suited or aces double suited. So in this situation, I'm guessing he's going to bet on this flop, particularly against this many opponents. So he bets the pot, and the button calls. The other two players fold, and it comes back around to me. Now, if you're me in that situation, you flop top set on a 7-5-3 rainbow board, what do you do?
Well, are you going to repop him?
That's what I did. I repotted okay. it. I repotted it all in for $800.
Right.
The original raiser next to me thinks for about 5 seconds. He calls, and then the button calls.
Whoa.
Okay. Now, nobody has to turn over their cards because it's not a tournament. The turn card is a 6, which I hate. Because that, you know, if nobody had the straight before, that 6 is very likely to have made the straight. But because in a cash game, they don't pause like on TV. There's no dramatic moment there. We see the 6, and then the river card is a 3, which pairs the bottom card on the board and gives me top full. And I take down the whole $2,500 pot.
Okay.
Now, I was telling this to a friend of mine, and he said, why would you shove on a dangerous flop like that? And I want to explain my thinking, and you tell me what you think.
Okay.
I didn't figure the raiser for 6-4, the guy to my left who had made it $30 pre-flop, unless he's in there with ace-ace-6-4. It's unlikely that that flop has hit him perfect.
Correct.
The other guy, the button, who just called the 150 on the flop, I didn't put him on a straight there either because he would have repotted it if he had a straight. Because in pot limit Omaha, you want to get the money in when you can get the money in, and there's always the chance that somebody else has the rundown that has bigger cards in it, which is going to create problems.
Yep.
So
I'm agreeing with you. I would have got my money in. There's no doubt about when it came back to me.
So when it comes back to me, I figure maybe the other guy has two pair. Maybe he's got some sort of straight rundown. But the reason the six didn't kill me when it did come on the turn was I again have 9-8-7-7, and the board came 7-5-3. So now I've got 5-6-7-8-9. I have top straight. So again, I'm not worried about that. The only thing I was worried about there was that maybe I'm only going to get half the pot because that's maybe where the guy was. So getting all the money in there seems to me to be the right play. The guy next to me did have double suited aces and had turned a diamond draw. He had a backdoor diamond draw on the flop, and he turned a diamond draw, which of course didn't get there on the end. The other guy who had overcalled my shove on the flop had two pair. Talk about your ace-nine guy in your hand making a bad play. I think that's a horrible play to overcall with two pair there.
Yeah, what is he trying to imagine, that he has, quote, pot odds or something? Because you guys are, I don't know. Yeah, he had to figure he was behind. I don't see how he could in any way in the world think he was ahead there.
Particularly when someone shoves like that, you got to figure that maybe that person already has the made hand, and it's entirely possible that the other people have some of the cards that you're going to need to fill up.
Yep, absolutely. No, I don't understand that one at all. I'd have been mucking my cards.
Okay, well.
But your shove I agree with totally. When it comes back to me, I'm sitting there with top set. You're sitting there basically, there's no way I'm going to lay that down for sure, and I'm probably shoving it all in.
Yeah. So that was one of my favorite hands of the weekend. It was a nice, lucrative weekend for me, mostly playing PLO up there after busting out of the circuit event, which continues, by the way, through next week, and they've got the main event going on up there, which is one of the four regionals that will eventually lead to a $1 million championship that'll be at Caesars Palace next spring. And by the way, the WSOP folks announced this past week that some of the circuit events are going to be airing on TV again, not on ESPN, but on Versus, which is the cable channel that also has rights to the NHL. They're going to be beginning to air some of those probably in June of next year. That's the first time Versus has ever put on some poker tournament coverage, and it'll mean more poker on TV starting just about the time that the World Series of Poker is getting underway out in Las Vegas. That means there'll be a whole summer of poker on TV next year from the people at the WSOP. Okay, let's take a break here, and then when we come back, David Williams will join us. David was the runner-up to Greg Raymer in the 04 main event, and earlier this year took down the WPT Championship. This is the Final Table with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris at Harris St. Louis on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcasts downloadable via iTunes and on thechipleader.com. From the poker room at Harris St. Louis, this is the Final Table, the weekly poker radio show with Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips. I am Paul Harris, and our guest segment today is brought to you by PokerStars.net, the place where the big-time pros like Dennis and our guest both play. Talk a little bit about PokerStars, and then we'll bring our guest on, Dennis.
The place that I play, it's the place that everybody should be playing 24/7. It's the best site in town, there's no doubt about it. They've always got something going on, and now they've got the new NAPT going to be happening in the bike in just a few weeks out there. You can go online, you can qualify for free, and play your way into a seat at the table out there, maybe against David, maybe against me. We'll both be out there at the NAPT. But anywhere you want to go in the world, that PokerStars will be there. Australia, Latin America, Europe, something like that. Download the software and start playing. Learn the game. Get in there, guys, because I'm telling you, you can't do any better than that. You can play for free. PokerStars.net. Qualify, and I'll see you in California.
Not only that, they're also starting to do qualifiers for the PCA down in the Bahamas January, which I know is one of your favorite events of the year.
Love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. And well, I think we're lucky enough now. Go ahead.
I
think we're lucky enough now to be joined by David Williams. This is a guy that has won $8 million in his lifetime playing at the poker table. He's got 7 career titles. He's got 51 different caches. His poker prowess basically cannot be questioned. But the background for him, this is a guy who was an honor student, had a 4.0 GPA, had a 1550 SAT, got admitted to Princeton, and he was one among the world's best players in a fantasy game called Magic the Gathering. He's now made poker a career for him. Obviously, he's joined PokerStars Pro, and I'm kind of proud to call him a friend. David, are you there?
Hey, Dennis. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Are you here in Vegas?
Yeah, I'm here in Vegas. I'm at home. I was playing the World Poker Tour at the Bellagio this weekend, and now that's over for me, so I'm just relaxing before I head off to Hammond, Chicago for the World Series of Poker Circuit event.
David, I was just there in Chicago, and it's a great place. I don't know if you've ever played in that room, but they do a terrific job running the event there, and they have huge crowds for the opening event, and I think they'll probably get a pretty good number for the big regional championship that you'll play next week.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited about it. I mean, I just love that area, and it seems like the weather hasn't gotten too bad yet, so it should be a really good trip.
And by the way, when you say home, is home still Panorama Towers, the official home of Las Vegas poker players?
Yeah, it is for now, at least in the meantime. I mean, I'm still so upside down on this place because I bought it, you know, during the boom when prices were high and everybody was doing well, and it's not worth that much anymore, so I really don't want to sell it yet because I'm not ready to lose that big amount of money, but... So I'm here for a little while, you know.
Well, I tell you what, I've got a quick question for you. I know everybody's upside down in Vegas, so don't worry about that. You in the majority here, I think. You recently switched, dropped from Bodog over to PokerStars. Why did you decide to do that?
Well, it was kind of it wasn't really anything bad going on. It was just that, as you know, Bodog is not a major site like PokerStars.net. You know, Bodog is mainly a sports betting site. I mean, they have poker, but it's just not their main source of revenue. And I was a little expensive for them, I guess, and they weren't really utilizing me to the most of their, you know, what they could. They, you know, they weren't using poker ads. So we had decided we weren't going to renew my contract after about 5 great years coming up in May.
So we were just going to both part ways. We had discussed it. We knew about it. I knew about it, you know, months in advance. So I knew that as of May 1st, I'd be without a sponsor. So people who helped me, my agents and such, started shopping me around. Luckily, during negotiations, I was able to win the World Poker Tour World Championship, which really helped increase my stock. And I wasn't that many days without a sponsor. I mean, we started as soon as it was over with Bodog. I won that on April 27th. My sponsorship ended on May 1st, and we had already started negotiating with PokerStars, and we made it official to start the main event of the World Series to kind of really get the press buzzing. And, you know, here I am with the site that really fits me now, the biggest site in the world with all the best games and all the tournaments I love to play, and live and online, and now I'm part of the team, so it feels great.
And so there's a lesson for the young poker pros in their early 20s now who are wondering, how do I get a deal? How do I become a Team PokerStars pro? All you have to do is win the WPT Championship event.
I think it's more than that. It's not just that. I mean, you know, there's a lot of players that have won, you know, some of those events without sponsors. I mean, it's a combination of things. I was just very fortunate that it helped increase my stock, you know, right at that moment.
Yep.
Well, there was a little bit of a gap there. I mean, you did well. You've got several bracelets, but up until this year, you'd kind of not been as successful, sort of like the Grinder. He had about a year there where he wasn't as successful. Was it just a run of bad luck? Did you not play as much poker? Did you play more cash games maybe? Or you definitely are at the top of your game now.
It could be a lot of things. I mean, definitely, you know, everybody knows there's a lot of streaks in poker and just like anything else in any sport or any game. And me and Grinder both, I mean, we're good friends and we've talked a lot about this, so it could be a combination of just a bad streak, but also I think I had to sort of readjust my game because poker changed from the way it was in 2004, 2005, even in 2006. You know, it was a lot easier, players weren't as educated, you know, you were able to just use aggression and run people over. But the players started getting smarter and better and learning how to adapt to these tactics. And when that happens, you've got to adjust your game too. And it took me, you know, maybe a year to realize it and implement it. But, you know, now I feel like I'm able to compete again, and I'm up there again with the best players.
So how did you change your game?
You know, I really just needed to start giving the players a lot more credit for knowing what to do in situations and really being aware of what my image was and how to capitalize on that. I mean, a lot of players knew that I was very aggressive and sort of a maniac in a sense, and they were able to use that assumption to make correct decisions against me. And because I know that, you know, I had to adjust my aggression. You know, I had to tone it down in certain spots, give people credit for hands in different spots, and just really, you know, sort of reboot it and start playing a lot differently.
I love the other. We've talked on the show before. Poker is just getting so many levels now. The level of the players, because of the internet, is just climbing and climbing. So now then, you two key things that I talk about. Knowing what your table image is, so people can put you on a range of hand, and you have to know what they put on, and you being able to narrow down and putting your opponents on a range of hands, so that you know how they're playing and such. Are there any other key tips or something like that that you could give our players out there to try and sharpen their game?
Well, those are the two of probably the most important things. But I think one of the things that really just hit me hard this weekend is just about patience. I mean, I being patient, there's no substitute for just, you know, not giving up and really just waiting for a ideal, perfect spot. I mean, I'll tell a quick story. At WPT, at the end of day one, we started with 40,000 chips. I finished with 9, and we were coming back the next day, and the blinds were 3 and 600. So I had about 15 big blinds, and I wasn't really excited about my chip stack. But usually in my career, coming at the end of the day, when I have that small of a stack, and they say, okay, we're going to play 7 more hands, I would just find a way to stick it in and try to double it up or go home because I wouldn't want to come back with that short of a stack. But I decided to do something differently. I'm like, I'm going to just, if I don't see anything good, I'm going to fold, come back tomorrow with my short stack, and really not give up and wait and wait and try and find it. And I'd never have done that before. I mean, I never had a short stack for that long. And I came back day two, and I think the entire day I was short stacked. And I had under 20 big blinds for 8 hours. And the last level, I finally picked up some hands and was able to finish with 40 big blinds. And I was just amazed that it took me 7 years to really know that if you don't give up, sometimes it might be your day. And I'd always said, I don't have any of those stories where I was down to nothing and came back and won a tournament. Well, I think it's because I wasn't trying when I got that short. And I realized that if you try and wait, that you can have a comeback. So It didn't work out on day three, but it still taught me a valuable lesson that hopefully can further, and I can just get further in my career.
You know, David, this is one of the things, and I've known Dennis for years, one of the things that I noticed about him when he was just a local tournament player here in town was his ability to not panic when his chip stack got knocked down 50% or even 70, 75%, keeping in mind, you know, in relationship to what the blinds were and what the stacks were at the tables. Dennis and I have talked about this often, about that ability to say, I'm not giving up right now, and I got 20 big blinds. I am not in an any ace shove position right here. Dennis's game has improved since then, and I think that's a valuable lesson for a lot of people. You know, I'm sitting in a room here at Harrah's St. Louis with a lot of people who come in and play a $40 or a $60 tournament in the middle of the day or in the evening, and, you know, you maybe only get 1,500 or 2,000 in chips, or they may go to 10 times that now and ramped up the blinds and antes a little bit. But I see it quite often in all sorts of tournaments where somebody gets down and they think to themselves, oh, I got to get lucky. And you are reminding people, which is such a great point, no, you got to stay patient. Wait for your spot.
No, I mean, it was amazing. It had me really thinking how many times in the past, you know, 7 years where I'd gotten probably that short. I mean, 20 is still fine to work with, but I got down to 15 and 10 and 8 big blinds, and how many times in my career I'd gotten that short and just said, screw it, and the first opportunity just shipped it in, got knocked out. And I wondered, had I done things how I did this time on day two, all those times, how many more titles I might have, how many great Cinderella stories, or whatever you want to call them, where comeback stories where I was down to nothing and doubled and won the tournament. I mean, you hear those stories from people and you're like, this guy had one big blind and won. How the heck that happened? It never happens to me. Well, it never happens to me because I was never waiting. So maybe, you know, maybe if I had, you know, who knows where I'd be on the all-time money list and title list. I might have some more. So from here on out, you know, you're never going to see me take that super short stack and just chuck it in there. I'm going to really be patient every time.
We're talking with David Williams, our guest here at the final table. Dennis Phillips is in Las Vegas, as is David. I'm Paul Harrah's at Harrah's St. Louis. We're going to have to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk to David a little bit more about some poker strategy and about how he made it to the heads up with Greg Raymer in 2004 when he was 24 years old. Now that would make him an old man in the world of poker, but in 2004, that was still kind of unique. We've got lots more ahead. 23 years old, excuse me.
Yeah.
Lots more ahead as the final table continues here on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcasts on thechipleader.com. This is the final table, the weekly poker radio show with Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips. He's in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harrah's, sitting at table two in the poker room at Harrah's St. Louis, where you can find out about the tournaments, 14 of them every single week, by going to harrahs.com/STL poker. This place will be home to another World Series of Poker circuit event next April, a full 2 weeks of great action here that Dennis and I will both be a part of. And they've got great restaurants as well, like Sammy Hagar's Beach Bar and Grill, with that happy hour every day from 3 until 6, with Sammy's own island-inspired menu and Cabo drinks and half-priced appetizers. And, of course, 100% of Sammy's portion of the proceeds goes to local children's charities through his Hagar Family Foundation. And every Saturday, KFNS and Sammy's have teamed up for the Babe of the Day Grand Slam Sports 2011 calendar search. A lot of attractive women in here in bikinis and lingerie and sexy Halloween costumes. This goes on until the final, which is on Halloween weekend on October 30th. Not this Saturday, but it'll pick up again next weekend for the big finale. And you can come down and get all the details or go to harrahsstlewis.com to find out more. All right, back now to our guest who's out in Las Vegas with Dennis.
Yeah, David's joining us, David Williams. A lot of success in poker, including just recently. Just got done playing here at the Bellagio and getting on his way to go to Hammond, and then I think Foxwoods, and then out to the NAPT, if I'm not correct. Is that right, David?
Yeah, it's going to be busy. It's not a lot of big events. We're playing the circuit event, the World Series main event, the regional championship in Hammond, and then we're headed to Foxwoods, which is a venue where I've always, you know, gotten deep and never made that final table. So now is the time, I think. I'm ready. And then after that, back here to the West Coast for the PokerStars.net North American Poker Tour in LA. That's what I'm most excited about. I mean, it's a $5,000 buy-in, so it's a price point that should get a lot of players, and LA is known to get a lot of poker players, and the action's fast and furious out there, so I cannot wait for that event.
Yeah. David, before the break, I mentioned that I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how when you and Raymer got heads up and he took down the 2004 main event and you were the runner-up, you were only 23 years old at the time, which was young in 2004. Now, of course, most of the people would look to you and go, okay, Grandpa, move aside.
I had a shot at breaking Phil Hellmuth's record. Had I won that year, I would have been the youngest main event champion ever.
So we know how the guys who are in there, you know, the Joe Cattos and the young guys who are doing it now are doing it. They've had several years of online experience. How did you get to the World Series of Poker main event, heads up at the final table at age 23 in 2004?
Well, poker online was going, but it wasn't as popular. Like, for example, a lot of people don't know, I did qualify for that World Series of Poker on PokerStars, and I did win my seat there. And I had been playing on PokerStars for years, but I actually started playing poker in Dallas in sort of the underground card rooms, kind of like the shady scene you see in movies, you know, like where you show up at places and everybody has nicknames. And I started playing in rooms like that at 17, and pretty much I did that with all my spare time. You know, I wasn't making a living right away. I was still going to college because I'd left Princeton, came back to Dallas, was going to SMU throughout this whole period, going to SMU, playing poker there, working at, you know, restaurants. But eventually I started doing pretty well there and getting better and making enough money to where I could, you know, pay for my bills with that money. So I was kind of cutting my chops in the underground card rooms in Dallas for many years until the World Series that year. And I went out there and said, I'm going to give it a shot. And that shot turned out to change my life.
Well, you say it changed your life. Obviously, you're 23. Any words of wisdom for another 22, 23, 24-year-old that comes on and makes it big into it?
That makes it big first or that wants to?
No. No, that actually does do well. I mean, obviously, you've propelled that forward to a nice career in poker, and you've got a good reputation and such. There might have been some hurdles in the way, but I'm just wondering, somebody 22, 23, 24 goes and wins a major tournament. All of a sudden, he has cash in the bank. And lots of people surrounding him. They're his new friends.
What kind of wisdom
do you have for him?
Well, don't loan anyone money because you'll never get that back. Don't invest in anybody's ideas because everybody has one, and none of them have ever worked out for me so far in 7 years. I've invested so much money in it. Hey, I got this idea. Can't lose. Never had any of those work out. So
yep.
Don't invest any money in anyone. Don't loan anyone money. And don't gamble too high just because you had a big score. Just stay at what you were doing and use that money to change your life and maybe play some tournaments, but don't start playing big, crazy cash games that you're not used to playing because, you know, bad run of cards and that money could be gone and your life's going to be changed. So take it easy and hold on and just take care of your family, really. That's the biggest advice I can give.
Bankroll management, that's great advice. David, a couple of months ago you were on Poker After Dark on NBC. In a week, you know, Maury's always coming up with these theme weeks for PAD now, and you were on what they called Lonesome Shark Week. It was you and five other single guys, including Antonio Sfondiari and Eric Lindgren and Mike Matisau and Brad Booth and the Englishman James Aikenhead, who made the final table last year. I don't have a poker question for you. I've got a prop bet question for you. At some point, Lindgren busted out and said
right.
that he was going to go out and find a woman and date her, and I don't know, was he supposed to bring her back? Or I can't remember the details of the prop bet, but we never really found out what happened there, so you're the eyewitness. Fill us in.
I'm pretty sure there was nothing that came of that. It was sort of banter for the TV, and I think that the people, but you know, they busted out, and then they forgot about it, or one went home, one didn't, and I'm not 100% sure because I was, you know, there for a few more hours after they both left, and I don't really keep up with them to know what happened, but I'm pretty sure nothing came out of it.
Oh, okay.
I didn't hear anything. I think it was just a lot of hype.
Have you ever been involved in any kind of interesting prop bets? Maybe that you wish you'd never got involved, like the Joe Seabox tattoo deal or whatever.
Well, I'm kind of nitty. Not many people don't know that because of how I play at the poker table, but I really don't prop bet too much, just because I like to bet on things I can control that I know I can control, such as like at the poker table. But I was at the Turks and Caicos a few years ago for a World Poker Tour, and we had heard a story of Huck staying in the ocean, and it was kind of chilly, and we bet that a friend of ours, me and some other poker players, bet that my friend Matt Gianetti couldn't stay in the swimming pool for, I think it was 18 hours with water up to his neck, and it was like for $5,000, he had to just stay in the pool. But we didn't really clarify a lot of things, so he ended up having like some other kids making side action on the bet, and they started bringing him buckets of hot water every few minutes to pour on his head, and then bringing him food, and the water where I told him to stand, I didn't clarify, it had to be up to his neck, so it turned out he could like walk to a different part in the same line and have water up to his chest. So the bet kind of fell apart, but it was a good idea, so he was able to just kind of hang out for 18 hours and get fed water and drinks from kids, and it didn't make it as difficult as it was supposed to, and he did it. So if we did it again, we'd have to put some more rules on that. I don't think he'd be able to do it.
And of course, we mentioned at the beginning of this that you live in the Panorama Towers, where there's like four or five dozen other poker players. There was a monster prop bet going on both last year and this year during the World Series about bracelets. Were you involved in any of those?
My good friend Justin Bonham is one of my really good friends. We play Magic together. We actually played all day yesterday, and I've known him for years. And he likes to make that bet because he has confidence in the residents in our buildings, and he thinks it's a good bet, and he's won it both years. So the way I was involved is I was just one of the people that could win a bracelet and help him win his bet. Unfortunately, I didn't win one the past 2 years, but I didn't have any action on it because, like I said, I don't want to bet on other people. I like to bet on things that I can control. So there's just too many people involved in that bet, and that's not my cup of tea.
Well, listen, while I have both of you on the phone from Las Vegas, just before we went on the air today, we got word about who has been inducted or will be inducted into the Poker Hall of Fame. We had talked this earlier this year, Dennis, about the nominees being Chris Ferguson and Barry Greenstein and Jen Harmon and Phil Ivey, Linda Johnson, Tom McAvoy, Daniel Negreanu, and Scotty Wynn, most of whom we thought would probably be pretty good recipients of that. But there were a couple of locks that we both voted for, and I think that the two guys who got in were the ones who you and I both chose. Dan Harrington and Eric Seidel will both be going in as the 39th and 40th members of the Poker Hall of Fame. They'll be inducted on Monday night, November 8th, before the heads-up finale of this year's main event. Comments from either of you?
I think they're both deserving. I mean, I've met them both. They're both excellent gentlemen, great players, good ambassadors for the game. They've been in the game for so many years and been putting up results for just as long. So, no, I think it's they're both worthy. It's awesome. Excellent. I'm very excited for them.
Oh, yeah, very, very worthy. As I said, when they brought the list out, if Eric Seidel doesn't make it, there's a problem. And Dan Harrington, who could object to him going in? Gentleman Dan there is everybody likes him. He's always a true supporter of the sport in any way possible. And you talk about a class act. Eric Seidel, no matter what is needed, never a bad word to say about anybody, always trying to be positive and positive about the sport. See him at a number of different charity events and that. He's actually become a pretty good friend. Went out with him and had supper with him over in Monte Carlo, and another friend of his over there. Just two excellent guys. 100% my backing on their choice.
Yeah, Dan has written books that have, for some poker players, become the Bible of both cash and tournament player, and he's written online books and short stack, short-handed, six-handed books as well. And Eric Seidel, maybe this finally makes up for the scene in Rounders that everybody's seen a million times, where where he lost the gold in '92 to Johnny. But an eight-time bracelet winner, certainly deserving of that big time. And congratulations to them. And the others who are on the list, there's always next year, right?
Yeah, I think all those players will eventually get in over the course of history in the future at one point or another.
Yeah. Before we let you go, David, last thing I want to mention here is the Poker Players Alliance, which I know we're all big supporters of and which is a sponsor of this show. So I want to get in a plug for them today, because today they are fighting a case in South Carolina in the Supreme Court there. Some guys were busted in a home game. You know, we talk so much about making online poker regulated and licensed, and the battle that was recently lost, unfortunately, in Washington State and other places around the country that are fighting online poker battles. But I talk about it in not just having to fix things in state houses and in the courthouses in this country. And today, there was an appeal by the state of South Carolina, which had lost in two lower courts already, after busting these guys who were just playing hold'em in a home game. They had two tables going on in this guy's house, and the rake essentially covered food and beer for everybody. Nobody was getting rich off of the rake from this game, although some of the people who were playing there were probably making some money. So the PPA was in the South Carolina Supreme Court today, fighting for poker players in that state. And, you know, these sort of things tend to have a rolling effect on the rest of the country. So we won't find out what the decision is by the South Carolina Supreme Court for a couple of months. But there's yet another way that the PPA is fighting for us. And if you're not a member, go to thepPA.org. That's the Poker Players Alliance, thepPA.org, and fight for poker players like me and Dennis and David Williams as well. Pretty important, right?
That's exactly. Actually, I'll be going to Denver for Senator Bennett's one of the co-sponsors for the bill. The bill is now in front of the in Washington, and a fundraiser for him on the 26th of this month. Senator Bennett, a staunch supporter of the PPA and of poker players around the country.
David, we're going to run out of time here in about a minute or so. Anything you want to throw in on that subject, or anything else you want to promote that you've got coming up?
Well, you know, just as long as everybody, you know, keeps playing, get on PokerStars.net and practice, and, you know, hopefully you can make it to one of the big tournaments and meet me out there at the final table. I mean, that's what we're all playing for, playing to get to the final table.
That's right. Absolutely. Well,
and I appreciate you coming on. You got some solid advice for some of the players in that strategy, and congratulations on your recent success. I'm sure you're going to have more. Just don't pick on me until we get to the final table, okay?
I'll do my best. I can't promise. If the chip stack gets low, you got to find them somewhere, and hopefully it's not on your stack.
You know, when Dennis said when Dennis heard you say you've toned down your aggression, he started ramping up his.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just you got to all do it according to what your image is. I mean, some people need to tone
absolutely
it down. Some people need to ramp it up.
David Williams, Thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. It was a blast, and good luck on the future shows.
Thank you. With Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas, I'm Paul Harris at Harris St. Louis. That's it for this week. Get our podcast on thechipleader.com and join us every Tuesday at 3 on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.